On September 23rd of this year, President Donald Trump addressed the General Assembly at the United Nations. Today on my show, my guests will be Paul Micucci and Donald Trump.
I ended seven wars, and in all cases, they were raging with countless thousands of people being killed. No president or prime minister, and for that matter, no other country has ever done anything close to that. And I did it in just 7 months. It's never happened before. It's too bad that I had to do these things instead of the United Nations doing them. And sadly, in all cases, the United Nations did not even try to help in any of them. All I got from the United Nations was an escalator that on the way up stopped right in the middle, and then a teleprompter that didn't work.
Well, there you go. Yeah, a teleprompter that didn't work. The hand gestures are always on the way. It didn't work. It stopped dead. Well, there you go. Paul Micucci, thank you for joining Donald J. Trump and myself on today's show.
Thanks for having me. You know, I wish he was here, but unfortunately, I'm sure he's busy trying to recap the speech. But
I'm sure he would tell you it was one of the best speeches in the history of the UN, which seems to be.
It was the greatest.
One of the greatest. We're making the UN great again. I promise.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that was on his mind.
Well, what did you think overall? I mean, the truth is, it was a filibustering like no other.
Yeah, it was. You know, approach versus content. So I guess that's where my mind went right away. I said, okay, you know, I get his approach. You know, it's harsh and it comes off arrogant. I get that. But I said, you know, let's take a look at it and look at really the words that he's saying. So then, and that's what I wanted to kind of go through.
Oh, well, let's go through them, shall we?
Yes. Let's go through today and really see what the content is, because I think sometimes people get annoyed. You know, it's the whole thing about, you know, the personality annoys you so much, you don't even look at the content because your back gets up, right?
You're right.
Like, you know, it's insulting. It's kind of like meme-y. But no, let's go, because there are, you know, unfortunately, some of the thoughts are not bad to look into and try to develop. There's threads in there that I think you can pull out. So you want to take some time and go through.
But, you know, let me draw a comparison. It's like he reads picture of Dorian Gray, and what he takes away from it is, you can look great. You can look great. You don't even have to think about it. You know what I mean? Like, he misses.
Yeah.
He misses the depth often, I think, that people expect a world leader to have.
Well, he gets right to the end, right? He cuts to the chase. He tells you exactly what his opinion is, where he's going, and then that's it. It's over.
Right.
And it's done in a, you know, not a very nice manner. So, and that's, you know, the art of the dealer. That's his approach. And so, yeah.
Okay. So he says he used his speech to attack what he calls globalist ideologies. And he said the country should reject globalist demands, especially in energy, trade, and migration. And he urged leaders to defend free speech, religion, liberty, and national self-determination. Well, did we determine what self-determination was?
Yeah. Well, self-determination is really, you know, your own, I think from what I took away from it, is he was trying to say it's your own agenda of your own country and not follow kind of the globalist ideals that are projected, i.e. through the UN, right?
Okay.
So, you know, I don't think there are some bad ideas.
So basically he's saying, all right, now listen to me. I got you all in one room.
Yeah.
We can't listen to these guys anymore.
We can't listen to you anymore. So the concepts you're trying to project on the world aren't working.
Right.
So that's really where he's going. He's just saying he's calling BS right now and saying, we can't do this anymore. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
You haven't been helpful. And, you know, I don't think does anyone ever argue with free speech?
No, I mean, want it.
I guess if you're in a communist country, you do. But quite frankly, you know, more North America and most of the world.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Are we out there really having to scratch at our windows to get freedom of speech? No.
No.
It's pretty open.
Yeah. So what he's saying, let's defend it.
Yeah.
I think, which is a good concept. So the wording in that is fine.
Yeah.
Then he goes on to say religious liberty. Yeah.
Fine. Okay.
Yeah, I think everyone should have their ability to pick their religion.
Of course.
Practice it in a free and open market. That's fine. And quite frankly, follow your own national, you know, agendas. So in other words, you know, create a plan, follow a plan, you know, not be influenced by globalist ideals.
Yeah, I think that the ideology is of the UN is really what he, when he says globalist, that I think is who he's talking about. You're right.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing that he really riled everybody up talking about immigration. And Nick, by the way, anytime I'm talking or we're mentioning something, you got a clip, throw your hand in the air. I won't say no. Okay.
Gotcha, buddy.
The other thing, so immigration, you know, he talked about how European countries are being destroyed by illegal immigration and your countries are going to hell, he said.
Okay, so I guess I took away from that. Now, when he said it, does it kind of make the hair on your back, your neck stand up? Sure, the way he's going. But then when you look at it, he's saying illegal immigration.
Yeah.
Again, a concept not many people argue with. You know, any country that's seeing a lot of illegal immigration, you know, not a good thing.
Usually. He's like one of these guys in the room who's got a lot of money and maybe came into it somewhat easy. Mm-hmm. And he's got advice for everybody else in business around him.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And there he is admonishing these guys, basically saying, you know, you guys are idiots. You've let your countries go to hell with this immigration policy that the globalists are pushing on you.
Right. Yeah. Well, and illegal immigration, which he was, you know, remember, kind of back up a little. He was going through an onslaught, or the U.S. was going through an onslaught of illegal immigration during the Biden administration. Mm-hmm. I don't think we can argue with that.
Nope, that's true.
Yeah, you know, tons of people I know in Canada right now, illegally came, or legally even, came into the U.S. illegally, and then up and over and into Canada.
Yeah.
So it is, you know, it's quite a story. We've heard it all before. And quite frankly, no one was stopping it. So they had caravans of people, you know, coming over, crossing the Mexican border into the U.S.
But he doesn't say, you're letting your countries go to hell like we did, or like I did, or like I was unable to maintain in my last presidency and let it go again. He doesn't ever kind of self-reflect, does he?
No, no. Well, he tried, you know, and I guess that's the part that he misses. That's a chip that he's not very good at. His storytelling capabilities aren't terrific, right? So if it was me, I would have backed up and I'd said, listen, let me tell you a story about a wall I tried to build.
Yeah.
And the wall was to stop a bunch of people coming into the country. And here's why I tried to build it. And it didn't work. And quite frankly, by the time I actually got it 3/4 up or 2/3 up, you know, I was voted out of office. They took it down, sold it off, whatever. And, you know, it wasn't a great story. And now I'm having to kind of patch that issue up because it went on another 4 years after I left. Like telling the story and being humble with the story.
Yeah, there's no humility about this.
There's no humility. It would have helped the conversation. But, you know, I'm trying to advocate for both sides on this one. So I'll be two sides of the coin I'm going to project. And we've seen it here recently with some protests and stuff going on in Canada. We saw it in Britain. I think there's two sides of that story that we need to look at. And one is illegal immigration has to stop. And I think there's a lot of people in Canada right now want us to kind of take a break and look at our immigration policies and come back with fair and well thought out immigration policies.
That sounds like a fair assessment of where we're at. Yeah.
Because we've been bumping up and down and around and you know.
And that's a nonpartisan feeling, I think, in Canada. Maybe I'm not safe in saying that, but I think I am.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that we're
pretty sure.
We're inundated at the moment where we didn't expect to be.
Yeah, we didn't. But then on the other side of the coin, there's a group saying, you know, you saying that, and you saying stop immigration, which for the most part, people aren't saying stop immigration. They're saying
stop illegal immigration
and look at your legal immigration policies
right.
to make sure they fit the goals of the country.
Yeah.
So that's what they're saying. Now, on the other side, there's a bunch of people yelling, you know, that's racist and all that good stuff. It's not, right? We all kind of know that. But they're concerned that this is going to it's going to take a life of its own and basically affect the people that are currently here
mm-hmm.
trying to immigrate. So
right.
And I understand that. So I think you have to...
There has to be a happy medium in there.
Someone's, you know, it's funny. Silence can be deadly. And in this case, I think because we're not addressing it and hitting it head on in Canada and saying to people who are here, hey, we're looking at it. We understand you're here. You made the journey here. You're kind of in this gray area. Let's address it. And we're going to try to be as fair as possible. Someone coming out and having that conversation with the nation would maybe calm people down to say, okay, yeah, I'm going to wait this out. And maybe apologizing and saying, hey, I'm sorry we changed the policies 19 times because we seem to yo-yo this policy up and down,
right,
would help a lot. And so I think that's a communication problem that's causing a lot of issues.
Yeah, but even to the other side of that, Trump says, well, my policies, our new crackdown policies, well, it stopped them from coming.
Yeah, it stopped. It shut off the illegal border crossings. Yes, right? It didn't stop people from going to the U.S. So again, you know, you got to look at the content of what he's saying. So he's still welcoming people to come to the U.S. You know, I had a friend of mine called me the other day, and he's in the construction business, and he's an awesome stucco and concrete guy. And he said to me, do you know there's 83,000 jobs available in Florida for construction management?
Wow.
Right? And I said, oh, I never looked, but if you tell me that, that's great. So I said, that's a lot. And he said, yeah, there's a ton of jobs available. They're looking for people. The wage is good. He says, there's great benefits, vehicle, all that. He said, did you know that? I said, well, it makes sense. They're trying to build projects. Mm-hmm. They need people to build those projects and they need qualified people. So, you know, if you're interested, he said, I think I'm interested. I said, well, I'll get you over to an immigration guy. I know a lawyer. He can probably help you take a look at it. And if that works for you, you know, I'll come visit you in Florida.
Perfect.
With my family. But and good on him, right? Because he now, given the state of Canada, low housing starts, low development, you know, if you're in the construction business, and you want to support your family, you have to migrate. And
the eye on the horizon doesn't have any light.
No,
in Canada.
No, it doesn't. It's a dreary development outlook
in that industry for sure right now. Yeah,
And I think for quite a long term. So, which you know we've dealt with on the other shows, but you know what Trump's saying right now is he's saying legal immigration, have at it. Come on in. I'd love to have you. You know. Put your papers in. Let's see what you're qualified to do. Let's see if you have any money. Oh, there is a concept, right? Holy.
You might actually have money to invest in the country. You might
actually bring money to the country and create development and jobs and do cool things when you're here.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great concept. I don't know why we don't think that is in Canada right now, but it is. So he's encouraging that. Now, the way he's saying it, again, not the nicest way to tell the UN. But then again, you know, okay, so...
He says things like a grumpy bingo player.
He does. But look at, you know, he. I think he profiled Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. You know what? Given that he's his grandparents were from Germany. He probably pays more attention to it. You know, did they have great immigration policies? No.
No.
Is the country in kind of good stead right now? No. You know, they've had their challenges just like every other country. So, you know, he's highlighting it because he probably has people talking to him that he's related to.
And he's actually citing a problem in Europe that many countries are having. And they're up against economic times that could quickly reflect what happened in Greece.
Yes.
And I think that his warning, I think, is duly applied. However, like you said, it was a little heavy-handed. The other thing that he got everybody freaked out about was saying that climate change is the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world. Nick, do we have that one? No, we don't. Okay, well, you know what? I'm not going to impersonate it, but that was one that as soon as I heard that, I went, oh boy, and here we go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, he's been very vocal about the fact that he doesn't think, you know, the carbon footprint and climate change is happening. And
he calls it self-punishing when these carbon taxes and restrictions are in place.
Yeah, yeah, he does. So how about this, right? So you're at the UN, just some advice maybe for the UN. You're there, right? You have dissenting opinions on the issue of climate change, right? Why not put together six of the greatest anti and six of the greatest pro contributors to this, right, and have them debate it, come to some conclusions, figure out what you don't know, study it, and then come back. Like, this one's kind of a weird one to me because it's been bantered around in so many different forums, and there's so much kind of now against and for.
Mm-hmm.
Am I, you know, I lean certain ways at certain times. For the most part, I haven't seen a lot of hard evidence other than people, you know, point at the fact that it was warmer and colder and, you know, and I get that. And it seems to be true when they say that. So, you know, yeah, I guess it was a warmer summer. You know, I guess
yeah, I think
hurricanes
that
are worse.
They've even stopped with saying, you know, the phrase climate change says it, that there's, you know, a climate crisis means, okay, more hurricanes, you know, change of seasons, all of these things. And I think, yeah, to some degree, I think we're witnessing those. And I think the science is saying, okay, I think a lot of the debate is how much is human interaction with the climate affecting it.
Yeah.
And in fact, it seems to be that, yeah, we do have some effect on it.
So,
like you say, let's get to work on it together under one decided global operation.
Right. So then if China and India, right? So that's great. So then I guess we got to figure out at that point, are some of the bigger populations in the world going to adhere to it? And that's kind of where I've been kind of...
Well, what about this? What if NATO,
yeah,
some of the money spent by NATO, instead of like passing around money on wars and peacekeeping and nonsense in other areas, why not say, okay, everybody has to contribute to creating technology, updating India and China and other countries that have this huge carbon footprint, if it's making a difference, instead of doing other things with that money, let's upgrade those countries.
Oh yeah.
Or we're all together, right? We're united, right?
Yeah. Or agree we're not. And
right.
Therefore we're not going to do it. Like, and so, you know, those are, I think, where you're losing the narrative, I think, in this case. And I think where he is kind of going in this, and I won't speak, you know, I won't try to put words in his mouth, but I think where Trump is going, he's just saying, we're not going to be able to do anything about it, quite frankly, because, you know, a big part of the world isn't going to adhere to any of it.
Right.
So you're kind of wasting your time, which is the Elon Musk, you know, a little bit of the Elon Musk, you know, podcasting interviews, where he comes out and says it's not urgent, quite frankly. We do need to address it. But you know what? If the larger nations aren't going to...
What can we do?
So it's kind of that thinking. And, you know, it's a couple of days before or a day before, you know, he came out on Tylenol. You know, a very interesting idea, but, you know, not well presented.
Right.
Yeah, again. So, you know, in a lot of studies, it's kind of the same issue. Like, okay, there's two different views here. It's time to kind of put a think tank together, have a bunch of nations participate in it, and
totally
come with some conclusions.
Yeah.
Then we can kind of put this one to rest, because by not doing it, I think what they've done to the climate activists, they've kind of shut them down a little. I think they've neutralized it. It's like, okay, now there's two opinions. You've kind of neutralized it. The world's too busy, really. So they're just, let's deal with that, you know,
meanwhile,
next generation.
Meanwhile, the European nations are taxing the hell out of themselves. We're doing the same thing here in Canada.
Yeah.
And what he's saying, you know, don't self-flagellate over this. But I do think you're right. Let's come up. Let's decide. Are we doing something about it together? Or is there any point doing anything at all?
Right.
I think it's an interesting position for sure. He also went at all the nations using Russian oil and Russian energy.
Good point.
I guess if you were going to say something and you wanted to... Here's the thing, though. By this point in the speech, we've complained about five items I've heard so far, and we've already heard from him how he has stopped wars in a bunch of nations that the United Nations should have done. So he basically, by this point, we're all of us are like, wow, he's going for it.
Yeah. Well, he's coming off like he's going for it, right?
I guess, yeah.
But the content of what he's saying is, it's interesting. The content and the approach again, or he's giving you the impression that he's dressing them down. But when you dissect the words, is he really? Isn't that somewhat, you know, there's
a little bit. He's basically saying you're all fools. You're not doing what I'm doing. I mean, there's a certain arrogance. That arrogance is offensive, I think, to many. Although I didn't hear anybody booing him. That's the other thing. And we take a look at the press today, and it wasn't like over the top.
Very little press.
You know, I mean, yeah.
Politics is showmanship. Quite frankly, this is, you know, they might have got a quick briefing in the morning that he was going to go up and they all sit there. You know, like,
who knows, right?
Who knows? You know, there's probably, you know, what do they do on sets when they give people applause cards and, you know, laugh now, shout now.
Seat fillers.
Yeah, seat fillers.
Because I don't know any of those leaders, Paul. That could have been anybody sitting there. Who knows? That's the next thing we're going to find out, is that they were actors.
Yeah.
This one, I need you to address for me. He said that he has eliminated... He's in the golden age in America, and he's eliminated inflation. What the hell is he talking about?
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't... So, you know, going to do a couple shows coming up on the U.S. versus Canadian economy. He hasn't eliminated inflation.
By the way, a good moment to say, you need to go back, and they're posted now, because I was watching them last night, the review of the Canadian 2024 budget, the annual report.
Yeah.
That's a very good episode. It's a great way to learn about how our money's spent in Canada. Go back and take a look at tplmedia.ca and you'll find that in there. And then also the review of the budgetary situation in Canada also to be covered off. So go and make sure you find those. Paul does both of those.
Hey, can I jump back for a minute to the Russian oil and gas?
Yes.
Yeah. So... Again, you know, interesting conversation. So you're all.
And by the way, I didn't blow over just because I'm a communist. Okay,
I know you're not. But you know, he is making a kind of a valid point, right?
Yeah.
So you're all saying let's stop this war. He's trying to get it stopped. He's trying to put some restrictions on Russia to get them to come to the table to get this thing done.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, we just keep feeding the machine. So he's frustrated. I get that. You know, I don't think anyone doesn't understand. You know, he doesn't call anyone out. He just says, you know, a lot of you sitting here at the table, you really, you know, are sucking and blowing, right? You're still helping them out. You're still
dependent on cheaper gas,
cheaper oil. And, you know, why are you doing that? And quite frankly, stop if you're interested in stopping the war, because if you leave me on my own, I'm going to have to deal with this. I'm trying to deal with this on my own. You're kind of scolding me for going. You know, remember the response? You know, you do remember the response when he went and met with the two leaders and with Putin, and they came back and he said, I think I'm close. And then the UN right away got together and had a big meeting. And then, you know, there was a lot of pageantry about who was doing what and how, and where are we today?
It's a good point. I mean, the UN often seems to be the icing on that no more deal cake.
Yeah.
You know, because deals have to be made in stopping wars that are not pleasant for groups like the UN to have to face. You have to face the music from a humanitarian standpoint. I think it's tough for them to have a real position in many things that are disgusting, like war is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, famine, another one. Disease, another one. Some of these have ugly faces the UN does not like to address.
No, not at all.
Overpopulation in some places, underpopulation. They leave it alone, even though those are some of the obvious issues. Nick, do we have anything else that would be fun to watch before we go on?
Yeah, there's one more topic that I'll remind you of with this clip. It's audio only, so...
DJT, take it away.
We want to have a cessation of the development of nuclear weapons. We know, and I know, and I get to view it all the time. Sir, would you like to see? And I look at weapons that are so powerful that we just can't ever use them. If we ever use them, the world literally might come to an end. There would be no United Nations to be talking about. There would be no nothing. We want to have a cessation of the development.
There you go. There it is. I mean, that was essentially a threat to the world. You know, I may come off brash and arrogant to you, but need I remind you that we are the most powerful nation on earth? And I've got bombs, so I got to tell you. You know, like, he's very threatening in that way. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, you know, his words, his content of his words, he wants cessation of nuclear, right?
Yeah.
So nuclear bombs and everything. But, you know, I continually look at massive weapons that can end the world. So it's a rambling. I don't know if it really goes anywhere. I think it's his approach. I think kind of his, you know, just to remind you, you know, we're the
superpower,
most powerful superpower in the world. Okay, great. But don't, you know, leave us there. Don't go building any weapons.
Right. Don't think you can outbattle us if you're thinking to come to the field.
Don't start trying because that's not going to work. So, you know, it is a little bit of a threat, but, you know, it's common knowledge. I don't think he's telling us anything we don't know. But
first president I remember saying, we've got a lot of nukes. You better be careful.
Yeah.
Since
it's a different, it is definitely a different approach.
Since that Cold War era.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of anything else that came up. I had a couple of notes here. One of the things that I will say, and if you want to go down that rabbit hole, it's kind of interesting. There was a comparison made between Trump's UN speech and Gaddafi's UN speech in 2009, which is the comparisons of filibustering at full volume about how wonderful he is an interesting comparison. So I might recommend you check that out. I've seen it around.
Yeah.
Here's the response that the rest of the world is giving from the media, characterizing his speech as unusually abrasive, rambling, and heavy on grievances rather than substantive diplomacy. Not shocking, actually. The escalator teleprompter incidents became focal points. You know, I'll be honest with you. Yeah, on those ones, I feel kind of bad. Teleprompter not working on you sucks. That's a terrible scenario.
Yeah, when you're set up to speak in front of that many people in an important meeting, and your technology doesn't work, it does suck.
He did acknowledge that was his own staff.
Yeah, working he did. It, and so. He kind of laughed it off and moved on. I don't think he was coming to deliver a very stern message anyways. So, you know, he pivoted pretty well, I think, for what he was going to do.
Really, it was all tone. Everything that was a complaint was about his tone, which do you think is intensifying that tone? Do you think his brash approach is becoming, I think he's in his heyday of it at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there, you know, again, he has a loyal following that likes the tone.
Yeah.
I think the more he caters to that, the more people, you know, increase their approval of it. And so he keeps doing it. But again, yeah, I look at the content of it. The content, for the most part, there wasn't, you know, anything surprising in there. You know, whether it be his comment about Palestine, whether it be his comment, you know, that had been released, you know, days before of how he was going to go back and talk about, you know, the fact that, and even that, quite frankly, I think you and I talked about it before the show, Mike, you know, his approach to that was, you know, he opposed recognition of Palestine by the Western nations, saying it would embolden Hamas.
Yeah. And he never said, I'm in support of a genocide. I'm not in support. He never, so that I will grant him. And so I think also he didn't say that by accident or miss it by accident. I really think that genocide and war sickens Donald Trump. I think that people taking human life for the purpose of political power, greed, or whatever the reason is, he doesn't like it. I mean, that's a repeating theme that it's tough for him to cover.
Yeah, well, in this case, quite frankly, he's moved on, and he wants to build a resort, hotels. You know, he wants.
You might be right.
He wants to move the people out.
He's trying to subdivide.
He's past it now, right? Like he's, you know, in his mind, and this is I watching him and the way he presents himself. You know, he's already down the road of, you know, all these people are relocated.
Yeah.
This is actually being redeveloped into a resort, spa, you know, community.
It's pretty wild, but I do believe you're right. He's like, because he's always talked about, this is great real estate property. Once again, it'll be the holiday capital of the world. He's even branded it.
This is a developer mindset, right? You know, the developer has to always have a silver lining. Think about it for a minute. You know, and I'm over dinner, I always remind people and you know, put themselves in the shoes of a large building, you know, and I'm talking whether it be a condo, an office building or something. You have to be a little off center to be the developer of a large, like 30, 40, 50 story building.
Yeah.
Because you think of all the risks. So, you know, calculate all those risks. You have construction risk, financing risk, insurance risk. You have accident risk. You have the economy, whether you can sell.
I was going to say the economy changes and suddenly cement is a different price.
Exactly. You know, you can't rent at that amount. You can't sell at that amount. So all of a sudden
things pick up. There's no cranes available.
You have to put some type of personal hook in there. So the guarantee you're putting down on it is you. So if it fails, you're starting again, right? Which, you know, many of these guys bust and come back and live another life, right? So, you know, who would want to do that? You have to be a little bit of a different personality to do that. And quite frankly, you got to really like risk. Like you got to really be on the edge of risk to do it. You're dancing on a needle, on the head of a needle when you do that. So that's his personality, right?
Yeah, like no, I think it's always been that. He was the guy who used to call the newspapers pretending he was a publicist on himself. Yeah. So that's his MO. Well, look, I appreciate you talking to me about this. But, you know, and I will say this, kids, you don't want to be rude and abrasive. I know what we saw happen there, but you don't want to be rude and abrasive. You want to be open and commonsensical and, you know, unless you'd like to be the ruler of the free world, in which case, go ahead and be brash and abrasive. Thanks for joining us. Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
subscribe and tell a friend and all that jazz, and we'll catch you right back here on the Daily Counsel on the True Patriot Love Network.